Hello and welcome to the F24 podcast. My name is David and each week I'll be having creatives of all sorts come over to my studio in North Acton to talk about their lives and interactions with London culture and creativity. This is F24. This week's conversation is with Will Robson Scott, a British photographer living in New York. I've known Will for a good decade now and I was really happy to get to sit down with him and chat about his journey so far. You can check his work out on Instagram whilst you're listening at WillRS. We recorded this in April 2017 whilst he was over on a project.
We started just like skating Ali Pali and stuff and then met people and started, you know, skating the closer bits of North London. Like it was like an industrial estate by the North Circular. We always used to skate and get up to like Mad Mischief in as well, kind of like by Bounds Green.
Chapter 1, London. Will starts us off right at the beginning in North London and he's moved to New York City in his early years. We talk about his short time out there and then him coming back to the UK and loving football, finding video magazines about skating through his brother. We talk about teenage years and finding music and his first travels around the city and meeting an array of people at London South Bank.
Easy, Will.
Hello.
How you doing?
Good.
Good. Thanks for coming and thanks for... Yeah, I'm glad I caught you whilst you're over here. London and culture and creativity is what I like to talk about, and I like to hear about people's experiences and how London and culture help them become creative and then use that creativity later on in life, because considering we're now all over 30 and we seem to be hanging on in a creative world somehow, and I want to try and get that story out of everyone. So
just about
so where are you from? Where did it start?
Initially, well, I'm from North London, really.
Mm-hmm.
If you really want to go all the way back, I was born in the Royal Free, and then my parents, then we moved. Then my parents lived in Archway,
okay,
just like on Cressida Road, mm-hmm, which is like
Cressida,
the 41 bus route from Archway.
Yeah,
it's like opposite all the flats. It's just a road off there.
Yeah,
and then my parents, me and my parents lived there, and then I guess my brother was born, and then moved to just off Holloway Road.
Cool.
And then my dad got a job in New York, and I lived in New York for like, I think I was about 8 to 10.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay, wicked.
And then moved back
to that. Yeah.
And then moved back to Holloway. And then my parents... and me, my brother, moved up to just right by Alexandra Palace, so in between Muswellhill and Bounds Green, so a bit further out. But
but that was to accommodate a bigger family. Obviously, Holloway Road wasn't cutting that.
Yeah, yeah. And then spent my teenage years just
running around north,
running around North London and West London.
Yeah, amazing. And so 8 to 10 in New York. So you'd lived a bit of a London life. I know you obviously don't go out and run about with mates, you know, up to the age of 7 and 8 years old, but you're going shopping with your parents and you're going out into town and you're seeing London as a city and knowing that you live there, and then you moved to New York. And was it a lot different at that age? What was it like being 8 and moving to New York?
To be perfectly honest, I can't, it's not something that's like, I don't feel it had a massive impact on my life.
No.
Like growing up in London, I kind of early memories are like Holloway, going to like the shops on Holloway Road, and
so that's a bigger memory, pretty much.
No, I remember. I remember New York because I went to school there, and obviously I was with all these American kids, and I was the only English kid.
Yeah.
So it was weird, and like,
I suppose at that age, really, it is just, this is just a weird situation.
I just remember trying to fit in, and from going and playing football was playing basketball, and like, getting like roller skates and like playing some baseball and shit, like nothing that I'd done before. But you quickly have to acclimatize when you're that age as well. To be honest, I can't remember loads of it, and then because it was such a, to me it seems like such a small part of my kind of adolescence, it obviously had some impact, but I can't really remember how much impact. Obviously I got to see a completely different side of the world, and
but I suppose that you're just not going to really...
I wasn't listening to KRS-One and
or even down the punk scene or whatever it could have been.
No, I mean, I was 8 to 10. I was eating McDonald's. I remember going to McDonald's like once maybe once a week or once a month, my mum would take me, my mum and dad would take me to McDonald's. Which I remember, actually, I remember going to a birthday on the Holloway Road McDonald's as well. I can't remember if that was before that or after that, but yeah, McDonald's didn't have a big impact on me. Right. It's a memory.
So then back in London, and you end up back in school here and then go on to secondary school. And so did anything, what were you starting to get into, I suppose, then? You come back to London at age 10 and you're about to go into secondary. You probably got a year in primary or something like that.
I just love football. I loved football when I was really young. I just play football, watch football, like stay up, watch Match of the Day. I remember watching 94 World Cup USA. I just loved football when I was super young.
Yeah.
And then it all went downhill, I guess.
Well, was that America, though, making it go downhill?
No, this is all in England. I came back, when I was in America, I can't remember what I liked.
But you came back and were you still in love with football? Or?
Yeah. No, I came back and that's when I super got into football the age of 10 to whatever.
Wicked.
So 94 World Cup was... What am I? I'm 24 now, so...
Shut up, 24. You're just scared of living daylights out of me.
No, yeah, so it's a long time ago. Yeah.
So it was like you came back and that was it. Football was the passion.
And then I remember my brother, actually, it's quite funny because my brother's younger than me. He's like 14 months younger than me. Is he 14 months? He's around that.
Yeah.
Not Irish twins, but nearly.
Yeah.
And I remember he got a skateboard. I remember he got an ATM clickboard, which was like this brand that it still kind of exists, I think. Mm-hmm. I remember him getting it, and then I was like, oh, I want a skateboard as well, and I just got into skating.
And how old are you then?
14 maybe.
Mm-hmm, yeah, so your brother's like 13,
14
as well.
I remember getting a skateboard, and then I was just and I remember like learning to ollie, and it clicked. I remember when after I learned to ollie, I was like, oh, this is sick.
This is what I'm going
to
do.
And then I just remember watching, just trying to get your hands on as much, because skate videos back then were all VHS. Yeah. There was no
DVDs.
I mean, were there DVDs? 411. Well, that's the thing. My brother got a subscription to 411, yeah? So we'd, every month, 411 is a monthly... Yeah. Skateboarding video magazine that used to
a video magazine
that used to be around. It's not around anymore, I don't think. Maybe, or it might be in some. I don't think, because now it's all the Berwicks and anyway. Not to go to. I guess I should go into depth with skateboarding. But basically, I remember he'd get this once a month. He'd get this VHS tape, and 411 was everything. So each monthly would have different sections. So it would have like the Metrospective, which would be like a different city. So I remember like the Paris Metrospective with like these skaters, a guy called like Stéphane Laurence and like all these other dudes. And I remember the thing with 411, which was interesting about it, was the music.
Yeah.
And
that went
how
with the video, obviously. Yeah.
Well, each section had its own track with it. And I remember it being... Before that, I was into music.
Yeah.
And I was like, I remember like loving Definitely Maybe. I listened to like the music my dad had.
Yeah.
And you didn't really form your own kind of idea of what music you're into.
No.
And then I remember 411s coming, and each month you'd be hearing these new. Like, I remember, for example, the Paris Metrospective. It's like quite a well known section, but it had. Exhibit Paparazzi.
Yeah.
And so you'd get stuff like that throughout the 411, but then you'd also get like a Clash song.
Yeah.
Or like
Debbie Harry.
Yeah, Blondie, Debbie Harry song, or like some like Pennywise or Offspring or Wu-Tang or whatever. So this completely from a young age, it informed you
that there was a youth sound.
Not that, it just like was like, oh shit, there's such a diverse amount of music out there.
More than what I'm listening to. And it was what was calling you. It was like, yeah, that's a sick sound, I like that.
But it just informed you, and then I just, from that, I remember like getting into like, I had like a tiny little stage of playing guitar and like being into punk and like super into Nirvana.
And did skating bring you to that music?
No, to be honest, skating didn't really, I don't really know how I got into Nirvana.
Mm-hmm.
I can't really know. I can't really remember, to be honest. But Nirvana, I was like, I became obsessed with Nirvana.
Right.
I still listen to Nirvana, and I know I still know loads of stupid shit about Nirvana.
Okay.
And I collected as much Nirvana stuff. I got like a, I've still got it at my mum and dad's house, but I've still got like a crazy Nirvana collection of like LPs and like.
When did you start that?
I don't know, man. When I was like
12?
No. I remember I got into hit Nirvana really after he died, after Kurt Cobain died, which I can't remember what year that was, but I didn't get into them while he was still alive.
Yeah,
I don't really know why it happened, but it was the music. It was like all angsty and like,
I mean,
I was a teenager. I was like an awful teenager who just was like, yeah, this guy's like got it. He knows the anger, it was a bad time actually, to be honest.
So it was skating and music, which was kind of your first loves, and skating, by getting into skating as well, it introduced you to a hell of a lot different.
Well, skating was the catalyst as well, because the thing about skating was that it was different to, obviously I played football, you know, it's, but it's more regimented. Obviously you can just go have a kickabout with your mates in the park or whatever. It's getting completely different because it makes you travel the city and get to know London.
What I wanted to get to next.
And like, yeah, I can't. What happened? We started just like skating Ali Pali and stuff, and then met people and started, you know, skating the closer bits of North London. Like, there was like an industrial estate by the North Circular. We always used to skate and get up to like Mad Mischief in as well, kind of like by kind of like, yeah, it's Bounds Green,
yeah.
And then I remember just getting like, what was it, like £1.70 for a child travel card, and then we just started going to South Bank because that's where everyone went, and like from that just was pretty amazing, because like I remember growing up I had friends. Basically, really, I had friends in North, and I had like a few in West, just like through family friends. But then I met all these people from like Balham and like Streatham, or like these places I'd like never really been to.
Yeah, and barely heard of some of them.
Yeah,
as
because
well.
It's such a.
We don't. Yeah, you wouldn't talk at that age. You're not really talking about all these different.
Well,
boroughs,
also it was much more contained London.
Yeah, it's a different.
If you were from North London.
You were from North London.
You like stayed in North.
Yeah.
You were from South. You stayed in South, and it was cool because made all these friendships from people from all over London, and then you'd like end up like going back to one of their houses, and then you know you go to these parts of London you've never been to before, and you know you get this introduction from people who've grown up there.
And so you're still in school at this time, so this is like a Saturday hobby, like a Saturday thing you do.
Well,
were you finishing school? You in college?
Well.
Well,
maybe Monday, Tuesday as well.
Yeah, maybe a bit of bunking.
Yeah, it was whenever it was.
It was just what, it was. What
it was
did.
Whenever, man. Yeah. Like yeah, like obviously, bunk loads of school.
And so, how long were you skating for? Like,
well, I'm still skating now. You're and still I'm skating. 24, so it's. No, so yeah, so I'm yeah.
You're
so
still skating.
I'm still skating now.
Yeah,
I'm skating like more now. Well, not actually this year. I haven't skated that much, but like. Yeah, I still skate. I'm still a skater.
And so what, go to parks and skate or just skate?
Now it's like whatever.
Yeah.
It's whatever. It's whatever. Yeah. It's like old man skating. You just do it to like get out of the house and basically go for a pint afterwards, really.
Nice.
But it's like one of those things that it's a sense of freedom more than anything else.
Yeah.
And you still get the same thing. Like security. Now it's funny, like security would chuck you out and you're just like, all right, dude. Like,
it's fine.
I'm an adult.
Yeah.
Pay shitloads of tax. Like whatever. You can like say whatever to me, it's fine. I'm gonna leave, but I might do it really slowly. But it's funny though, because all I've got, because I basically live in America now.
Yeah.
Loads of my friends in New York are skaters or involved in skateboarding in some way. And so I still have a super diverse, they're not like super good friends, some of them, but you know, I'll skate with like 20-year-olds.
See.
4 years younger than me. And so yeah, it keeps you like younger and on your toes as well, and like
so you've gone through school and you're going through college and that, and you're loving skating and obviously everything around it with your friends and getting to see the city and meeting people everywhere, and then I know you did more than that.
Yeah, well, the thing is, like, from South Bank, I met mad people who I'm still, like weirdly fell out with for ages. But, like, for example, like, growing up,
yeah.
one of, like, early crew at South Bank when we were 14 was, like, Royd and, like, oh, wow. them lot. Like, so I've actually known a lot of them lot for, like, years.
Way before anything.
Yeah. Royd was... Mm-hmm. I have an outline on this deck of mine with a outline Sick. In like a pentel white. It's gone. My mum threw it out, I think. And then he went to. I don't know if he even wants this to be said. On
Mate,
this,
it's a bit of history. He's going to be told at some
Royd, you know. And I knew him when he was.
And was he writing then? Yeah.
He's been writing
for years.
He was like bombing with acne and like.
Yeah.
South Bank drum. And like all like mad rat bag writers who fuck knows, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like proper South heads back then.
And so you met him down there through
skating? So I knew people like Royd when I was 12, 13 skating South Bank. But then like there were loads of people. There's like the Brooks brothers, Phil and Dan, who are now like drum and bass heads.
Yeah.
Go a bit later and then you get to like the Palace lot who Palace didn't exist but like
a big brand now, they're killing it.
Well, it's beyond big. I mean you know, I wasn't super tight with everyone throughout the whole time, but you have these relationships where you'll see people now and you know them from growing up years and years ago, and you know
you
some people are still doing
yeah.
good. But then I remember from South Bank it was like South Bank probably loads of people are gonna like talk shit about me talking shit on South Bank as well, but it was like South Bank was kind of crazy back in the day as well.
What decade was this? Or what years was this?
This was like late 90s. Yeah.
Chapter 2, Culture. Skating has firmly gripped Will, and starting to write graffiti with friends and immersing himself into a mix of cultures, he ends up bringing a camera to the May Day riots and taking some photos that really sparked his imagination. This led on to him setting up a MySpace account, which in turn led into Will being spotted by a guy called Fred, who had a great idea and needed Will to pull it off.
South Bank was kind of crazy back in the day as well.
What decade was this? Or what years was this?
This was like late 90s.
Yeah. Okay.
South Bank was like
place.
Pretty. Well, it was completely open as well.
Yeah.
Like now, South Bank is just that one strip.
Yeah.
There was no Costa Coffee anywhere. There was none of that. There were kids coming down, like trying to like steam through and rob you.
Yeah.
And then there were like local kids who'd skate there who were like, you know, grimier kids who befriend you and then rob you, or they'd be your mates and 6 weeks later they'll just rob you.
Yeah.
Or
it was a definite cultural hotspot for all types of people, man.
No, but like, from that
you got caught in down there as well.
Yeah. I mean, and then like then just kind of like got into God, I can't remember the timeline now because it seems so far away. But yeah, you kind of just got immersed in graph as well. You'd be down there and you'd see wild people painting back in the day.
Whilst you were skating.
Yeah,
you
just see like
are in use.
People like, you'd see like all the London crews down there.
Yeah.
Everyone you'd see.
But you didn't pay much attention to it back then. It was just
No,
it
I
was
did,
in
I
background.
Did. No, I did. I did pay attention to it.
Okay,
like,
you liked
not,
it.
Not like, no, I did pay attention to it. But, it was more because I was friends with a load of the people who were writing down there, like the local writers who were, I can't even
and
remember.
And they were constantly there. And
I just remember, like, you know who I remember a lot? Fund. Not the same Fund now.
Not Debts.
No. This guy who wrote Fund.
Mm-hmm.
I remember him really well. He went on to write more stuff, but I don't know how, like...
I don't know who that is.
He went on to write... Yeah. Demo.
Oh, right, okay, yeah.
I don't know if like they want this being said, that's the thing.
Yeah, we can beep it. What was that? Who's that crew again? I can't remember his crew now. I just remember
most of the big crews you would see come through.
Yeah.
Because I spent shitloads of time down there.
Yeah, we were bunking school.
Yeah, like shitloads of time down there, so... You'd see everyone come through and catch tags or like...
And so that inspired you to want to take part, or were other friends doing it and you were like closer
no,
friends?
No, like with
or...
Graf, like I kind of got into it, and then really it was when I kind of, when I really got into it was when I went to like my second secondary school, which was in Finchley, where loads of writers had been to, and loads of writers. I don't know what it's like anymore. I think it's the school's changed quite a lot, but at that time there was like a big Finchley scene,
right?
Like loads of writers went there,
and that was just like, right, I've seen this, I know it. Like, it's more anarchy, which obviously the skating.
I don't know. I just went to the school, and I kind of at that point I didn't stop skating, but I kind of got into partying,
right?
And like going squat parties, and drinking loads, and doing whatever else comes along with it. And I didn't stop skating, but I kind of just, you know, you just got into drinking, partying, trying to chase girls, not doing it very well. And then I just, similar to kind of growing up in South Bank with writers, it's the same thing. You meet someone, and then if you get on with them, you get brought into their little world.
Yeah.
And usually their little world isn't, you know, your same geographical area. So I was going to school in Finchley, and I was, to be honest, I was not really going to school.
No.
Like, I was not, it was not a good time in my life, to be perfectly honest.
You weren't studying properly at all.
I was not good at all.
No.
I was just bunking school and just...
Pure anarchy.
And just...
Skating,
getting on buses.
Yeah.
Just getting on buses.
Smashing the fuck out.
And then I met like loads of like my mates from Camden, and like met all the ITS lot.
So and then partying and graffiti, bumped into
just going to pubs and like whatever, and then met all like the ATG lot. And then from that, it was just like, you know, then it just became a huge social thing where we'd all go to the same parties, get into mischief, and then kind of just became like, I was like, it was a bit odd because I was, there was unsaid rivalry. Yeah. Like everyone was friendly, but there was still unsaid rivalry between people. But I was friends with everyone. So I'd sometimes get like the piss taken out of me by one set of them.
Yeah.
Because I'd be like, oh, what are you doing? And so like Kilburn. And like, oh, you're in Kentish Town. And you're but the funny thing is, like, we're all like, I consider them all my good friends. Yeah. I might not see or speak to all of them a lot, but they're all like an important part of me kind of growing up and whatever. And that was that, really.
So let's. That kind of built up all your teenage years, and
this was late teenage years. This was later teenagers. This was like, I would say, like 17 to kind of 19, 20s. Yeah.
And you'd formed this nice group, all kind of into the same shit. You're all raving.
We'd all go to carnival.
Exactly. Yeah.
We'd all go to like the same pub in Camden and get chucked out and then like do it all the next day, and it's kind of pointless. It's kind of like a lot of wasted time, really.
Yeah, but that's what those years are about, man. What it's 17 to 20, man. Surely it is just about, fuck, I've done school.
Well, to be honest, it's better because before that I was going to like squat parties and even like
doing... So you'd already, that's what I'm saying, it all, you kind of met these people and it was like, right, this is the set, this is the one.
Well, it wasn't even that. It was like an evolution. It's like, I'm still friends with all of them, but some I will see, you know,
once every 3 years,
long, and some I won't. And it's just how life is sometimes. You become friends with people and still consider them my friends. I just might not speak to them all the time or see them much.
That's age as well, though, man. Especially being part of a culture. The amount of people we meet in a culture, it's fucking hard to keep up with every single one of them. And even the ones you get really close to, is it?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's just the nature of it all. So then what was it that led you on to...
Oh, yeah.
What
life.
You do, right? And just... Well, I mean, I wouldn't mind talking about a couple of the projects that you started with.
No, I can go into it, though, from before that. But basically, from basically getting into graph and then getting nicked a loads of times, I kind of was like, oh, I can't really be bothered getting arrested. It's annoying.
Yeah, it is very annoying.
It's, like, pointless.
Yeah.
And then it gets more and more serious. I never got into like loads and loads of trouble,
but
there's always that threat of it getting really serious.
Yeah.
And then my friend Tommy, who I'm still really good friends with, he was like, this was after GCSEs.
Yeah.
I left school, like farted around for a bit, and I kind of was like, basically need to get a proper job or find something else.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, and this is another thing. I also worked for years. Well, yeah, from the age of 15, I worked under the Westway at the skate park.
Oh, right.
So I had a job. PlayStation. Yeah. So I worked. I started off doing Saturdays.
Yeah.
As like a. Right, I'm telling this story really badly. But yeah, I worked under the Westway at PlayStation from when you were doing your GCSEs at school, you had to do a week work experience, yeah. Right?
So you worked from then.
And I kind of tried to get away with it, I think, somehow. I need my mum to corroborate this story. But basically, I kind of told the school that I'd already got my own work experience. Yeah. And I told my mum that the school had got me the work experience. And then the lines crossed somehow, and they were like...
No,
you're lying. You're trying to get a week of school. And my mum phoned up PlayStation, was like, my son needs a week's work experience. Yeah. He loves skateboarding, blah, 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 etc. And they were obviously like, yeah, come. Obviously for me to just like clean the bogs and like empty the fucking garbage out, whatever. So then I did a week work experience, and I was like, I got on with everyone there, and I was like, this is sick, like working in a skate park, especially there in
Labrador Grove, pretty much as well.
Also, it was like in an area that I knew kind of from
had a lot
going
of history
to Carnival,
as well.
But it was just like a cool zone to be in, like Portobello, and also with all these older heads who I knew.
Through South Bank and all of that.
Well, just through like skating and stuff, and then I remember, I can't remember exactly who it was, but I remember them being like, "Yo, Will, you're working Saturday." Basically, they were going out on the Raz. They wanted to go and get mash up.
Yeah.
So they were like, "You're working Saturday. You're opening up." I was like, "Sick!" Like, and from then I just carried on working at PlayStation. I mean, I think another thing that's kind of relevant is like when I was kind of growing up, a lot of my friends were older.
Yeah.
Not like hugely older, but when you're 15 and your friend's 17,
yeah.
It's a big difference.
Especially if you're still in school.
Yeah,
exactly.
And that was kind of a theme that ran throughout growing up. And then I started working at PlayStation, and I started having all these mates who were even much older than
me. Yeah, in their 20s.
Yeah, and then that introduces you into, they're like, come to the pub, and you're like, oh, like, I'm 15. Like, and they're like, nah, we'll get you in. And then I remember like starting going to like, for drinks on like Portobello and like Mau Mau and places like that when I was well young. I swear I thought I was fucking sick. Like, I thought I was like this.
What
like,
year is this?
Oh man, this must have been. This is. So what? If I was 15. I'm 20. No, so that's 15. That's 18 years ago I started working there. So what? I don't know. What is that? So that's 99.
99, yeah.
So like 99, 2000. I remember like going to like the Metropolitan and like Westbourne Studios when it just first opened, and like that's another thing. I had like a load of mates, and then I formed all these kind of links with West London and Portobello and Ladbroke Grove, and ended up having a load of mates down there.
And still living in Northwest.
Yeah, still commuting.
Yeah,
like, I'd do crazy. I'd go out on a Friday night and get leathered, stay at a mate's house in Camden, like roll out of someone's bed. Like, get the 31 and just turn up, like,
Twisted.
But I did it every Saturday for years, man. And then I did other, and I started working, I think I was working Monday nights as well. Okay. And then I'd do like other nights. But I was basically Saturday, every Saturday I'd work there 9 to 4.
That's a fucking Christy job.
On 9 to, I mean, yeah, yes, definitely. Yeah, yeah, it was sick.
Yeah.
It was amazing.
To be that in love with that.
But the funny thing is, as soon as I started working there, I kind of started skating less. Because I was just like partying. And, like,
it went along with everything else.
Yeah, I mean, I did still skate, but I wasn't...
Trying.
No, I guess the end of it, I kind of was skating less and less and less and less.
And but, then, so that... Doing all that, and then the 2000s come, and...
Yeah, so anyway, like, I think I just went off track. But, yeah, I remember after... linking with that time, I Tommy, my mate, was like, oh man, I'm doing this photography course, it's easy, you should just come do it to get like your parents off your back about getting a job or going to college. So I was like, alright, sweet.
Other interest in it.
I had no interest in photography whatsoever. I just had an interest of not getting a Monday to Friday 9 to 5, because at the same time I was actually working in the kitchens of a cafe in a garden centre, which was just like
We've all been there.
Bleak, man. Yeah. I was working in Ali Pali.
I worked in the kitchens at the Science Museum.
Exactly, man. depths of bad. So I was like working in Ladbroke Grove and working in this like garden centre as well. It was fucking bleak, man. But whatever.
So you were like, hang on, so you so knew he as
was
well.
Like, he was like,
in the times you were managing to, you weren't out there getting fucked and messing your skating or working at the skate park or being in the kitchens. You were like, hang on 1 minute. I need to sort this out.
Not so much in that way. It was more just like I need to like make sure, like my parents to like
get off my back. I'm still freaking shit out.
And so I wasn't. To be honest, I never really thought about anything back then. I was just like, I just want to have a fun time
and just keep it rolling.
I just want to skate.
And that was right. A good out then, I suppose, with Tommy saying that. And
yeah, so anyway, and then I went to this college, which actually doesn't exist anymore. It's in Kentish Town,
yeah.
Westminster Kingsway.
Was that down near the...
down by McDonald's where the old snooker hall used to be.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
By the police station.
Yeah, yeah, just round the corner.
Everyone's been to that police station.
Yeah, we've all been there.
Kentish Town. and then, like, I remember just coasting, not really having any interest in it.
Yeah.
And then this kind of links back to all this other stuff. I remember, I think it was... 03, 02 maybe the May Day riots.
Yeah,
and I remember everyone just being like, "Yo, we're going down." I remember like Asset being like, "Oh, we're going," and then you know, Heato Wins or them lot being like, "Yo, we're going as well." So we all like mobbed up together. I remember getting this like bus on the way down, and the bus just getting like thrashed. There's a photo of it in Crack and Shine, actually. There's a photo of it in the second Crack and Shine, and it's like you can. There's a snore asset on the top on the top panels.
Yeah.
Anyway, that was the bus.
Yeah.
I was like choreo, you know, and everyone was like, "That was like that's
the one."
And then I took my camera down, not really thinking about it, and I remember I just like took some photos.
Yeah.
And some guy came up out of nowhere and there was a policeman standing with his back to me and slapped an out of order sticker on his back. And I remember just taking one photo, so it's just a background of like a metropolitan policing with an out of order sticker on it.
Yeah.
And the policeman like turned around. He thought I'd stuck the sticker on him. He's like, "What are you doing?" Like, tried to grab me. I was like, No, I'm just like a photographer. I can't even remember what I said. Yeah. And this other policeman like turned around and saw he had a sticker on him, but it's sticker up, and he's like, "Oh, you're going to get nicked if you don't watch out, son." And I'm like, "Oh, later, see you later." And I just remember then, like, taking, like, two rolls of film, going back and processing it in the dark room, and then printing it and being like, "Whoa.
This is sick.
This is sick." Like, you can behave badly and document it, and it's kind of a positive. Yeah. Well, I wasn't even thinking like that. I was like...
Yeah, there was a feeling inside that equaled that.
No, I was just like, "This is cool."
Yeah.
I was like, "That photo is cool."
That was, I've seen that shot.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's still on my... I don't think it's on my website anymore, but
I remember it well. That says,
"You know, I really like the photo. To this day, I really like it."
Yeah.
And I remember that one photo. I was like, "Yeah, I'm going to do this. Like, I'm going to try and..." I wasn't even like, "That's actually complete bullshit." I wasn't like, "Yo, I'm going to try and do this." I was just like,
"You thought I'm going
to
do..."
"Oh, I just go to the pub and then like, you know..."
I'll bring my camera.
To be honest, I was so lazy thinking about it. The amount of things that I missed.
Yeah.
Because I wasn't really on it. Wasn't really trying to do it.
Yeah.
You look back and you're like, "Oh, the amount of stuff you could have." Even if you just like a little point and shoot on you back in the day.
Do you know what
the amount of crazy... Yeah, I was using a... No, I don't actually. I know what it was. It was like a fake Olympus.
Like a Mewtwo, but not.
No. It was an SLR.
Oh, right. Okay.
It was just like, I remember it shot all black and white Ilford, and it was just an SLR, like just a regular camera. Okay, not a point and shoot.
Yeah.
You actually had to set the exposure.
Yeah.
I didn't know anything about point and shoots for years, because like, the first time I heard about point and shoots when all people were using the Mew, all the writers, I remember. Yeah. But I just think about all the crazy parties and stuff witnessed, like fights and like people getting arrested and like. But anyway, no one ever documents it. That's the thing. No one had a camera phone.
Exactly.
Like,
well, it's different now. We've all got exactly the phones here.
But anyway, so then, like process those films, and I remember even my tutor, who I still speak to every now and again. At the time, she was like, "Yeah, that's what you should like do this. Like, you should try and like
do more of this.
Do something like this." And then I just started photographing my friends around me who were, you know, a lot of them were writers.
Yeah.
And then I was like, "You know what, I'm not gonna like try and do anything anymore. I'm just gonna try and document what they do."
With
I was never artistic. I was just like, just wanted to scribble on things.
Flashback. I swear to God, I remember you telling me that.
Probably. And then I remember, like, you know, I just go out with like A to G Law or like whoever.
Yeah.
And then, right.
So you started taking all these photos, and were you still keeping it film?
Yeah.
You didn't get a digital camera.
No.
You may well have done, had one, but you weren't
using
it.
I used film the majority of the time.
Yeah. And so you were going around with ATG and ITS and whoever else was running about, and you were running into
it. Was just them lot, really, to be honest.
Yeah, any skating shots or around then? Or was
no,
it
I still, to this day, I'm not a skate photographer. I'm not going to try and be a skate photographer.
Right, cool. So it's...
Like, I might have taken... No, I like took a couple of, like...
Yeah, you've taken
lifestyle
of shots
of people chilling and stuff, but at that point...
Lifestyle.
Yeah, but to be honest, at that point, I wasn't skating that much.
Yeah,
I'd like occasionally jump on a board, but I wasn't.
It wasn't the everyday.
No,
yeah.
I was getting older, and I was like,
"You were into different things as well."
I just
and them boys don't skate really, do they?
None of them. Really. No. Nah, I mean,
think Jack did.
Does
a little
Jack
bit.
Use his actual name?
Yeah.
Were we using government names?
Government
or were we using
names.
Spray tag names?
No, government names.
We're using government names.
Yeah.
Yeah, Jack used to.
Jack,
I remember really early at South Bank.
Yeah.
Jack, Rest, and
Monkey?
Sam, Monkey.
Yeah.
I remember them a lot. I remember I was friends with them at South Bank.
Them three were all from.
But they kind of dipped in and dipped out quickly. Yeah.
You were a staple.
Well, for a little bit. For a few years I was. But.
So you decided, right, I'm going to stop bombing, doing graffiti. There's no point. Because you didn't really get into piecing, did you?
No.
And so, obviously, them boys, them
That's
ATG
laughable.
Were fucking... piece. And them boys...
I wasn't good enough.
Well, they could paint. And same with ITS. They could paint
yeah,
as well.
Yeah.
Not to say, I didn't know if you could or not.
No,
I just
I
know
couldn't.
You for one thing.
I couldn't.
And you were good at it, but it was just like them lot were moving on. So I know you weren't watching going Halls of Fame with them and taking photos of them, and it was really about.
I would go Halls of Fame, but I wouldn't take any photos. Yeah. That's another thing. I just go and just chill.
And it was lifestyle photos, and then you were like, "Yeah, this is so." But still, when you made that decision, I'm just gonna.
It wasn't like a super conscious decision. It was more like, I'm just gonna go out with my camera.
Yeah, but you were gonna use it, and then did you think about your future whilst doing it at all?
No, of course not. There's no future ever. And even today, it's like you don't do something and think, all right, I'm going to do this one project for like 2 years down the line. I'm going to make sure it gets me an agent. Or I'm not going to do this one project, so I'm definitely get like whatever, try and get an award or get like whatever.
Do you think it's wrong to think like that?
I think it's bad to set yourself like specific goals. It's a good idea to be like, all right, this year I'm going to try and take 30 good photographs, or I'm going to try and make 5 films. I think if you say to yourself, I'm going to try and make a film that gets into Tribeca Film Festival, it's a bad idea.
Yeah.
Or if you say like, oh, I'm going to try and...
Passion and love really have to come way before any planning of any sort, because...
Well, it's not going to work. It's not going to work if you're just like, I'm going to do this to get money or do this to get recognition. It's only going to work if it's something you're interested in. But then, yeah, it's all just luck. And like, it's still to the day the same thing, man. It's still persistence and like a bit of luck, and like also trying to be just like a cool person. If you're a dick, then if you're a dick, like a lot of the time, it's not going to work.
It's all
going to
flop, isn't it? So because you weren't looking for a future in it, and you were just taking these shots, you inevitably got published, or
well,
you published some stuff, and what? What was the door that opened?
I can tell you exactly what that is. Yeah. I know that story exactly well. So I'd taken a load of photographs of just like, I can't remember the exact photographs now, but they were like action shots or like some portraits as well, whatever. And then Hurt You Bad at the time was like the website.
Hurt You Bad was the fucking voice of UK graffiti.
Well, this was like, this was just when people... I guess they were super early on it, but this was not the website of the internet of today. But Hurt You Bad was like this thing that people would check.
Yeah.
And like, I remember older people telling me about checking it. I can't remember.
It's
like
2003 they started. They've been at it for time.
Doesn't really... I don't... To be honest, I like haven't checked that thing.
Still going, man. I've checked it today.
Anyway, I remember they put a link to it.
Mm.
This was MySpace. This was like the MySpace time.
So you'd uploaded your photos?
I'd uploaded my... No, this is what had happened. I didn't have a website. I'd uploaded my photos to my MySpace.
Yeah, old school. Early 2000s.
Yeah, MySpace days.
Yeah.
Will's Tom. Images.
Will's Images.
That is what my MySpace
creative.
Handle. Not even trying to put your real name on it, like just Will's Images. Images. MySpace.com/Will's Images. Probably still there,
probably
to be honest. And I remember them not reblogging it, but putting a link and, you know, obviously just copying some of the images. And then getting an email from this guy I didn't know called Fred.
Chapter 3, Creativity. By the mid-2000s, things had really started to come together for Will, and the timing of the first publication gave London something it really needed, as well as a stepping stone for Will to continue looking to the cultures with his lens. He tells us what it was like putting that first publication together, and then photographing grime artists and pirate radio stations and dogs and their owners, and work to pay the bills.
And then getting an email from this guy I didn't know called Fred.
Yeah.
Being like, oh, I like your photographs. I want to use them for a magazine. And I was like, oh, I was like, nah. At this point, I was like, all right, like, I was like, graffitism. I was like, graffitism's shit, yeah. And it's not Bomb Alert.
Yeah.
So to me, it seems like this sounds stupid. And I remember him being like, oh, meet me. Come meet me and let's chat about it. So I went and met him. I met him in the World's End in Camden.
Yeah.
And just being like, oh, this guy's full of shit, man. And like him being like, well, I want to do this book of like some of your photographs, and like he was saying, I want to get all these people in, and like these names who I'd been trying to get to for ages, like,
to take photos.
So he wanted like all the names, like all the big crews.
Let me just jump back a sec. You started off with this, I'm always going to carry my camera.
No, not really.
Well, no, but just you'd gone to the riots and you were like, right, cool. I think I'm going to carry my camera, and you're going to take photos of your friends and what they get up to, and then you put these online. But was there anything else in between, or was this literally like Fred sees these photos and he's just like, ping, let's go, this might fit with my idea?
I think so.
Yeah. So that was kind of it. It was like, so even...
I had a MySpace, willsimages.com. Yeah.
And you were just...
super famous. Hurt You Bad put them up. Got
so
an email from some guy.
You were the same stuff, though, over those years. Just
I wasn't
like
doing
working
anything.
Whatever.
Yeah, I wasn't doing
taking
anything.
Taking some photos, going raving.
I was drinking
and just drinking.
Going
and
to the pub. Man.
Yeah.
I wasn't even raving.
And there was still no thought, really.
No, I mean, obviously there was a thought of like, all right,
you
we're
fell
go,
in love
let's
with
go
this
out.
Camera.
Let's go out tonight. That I'd be like, oh, who's going out tonight? I'm going to come along and take some photos. And I think at this point I had started doing some portraits, but like not much.
Yeah.
I had done, it's hard for me to remember.
They were just keeping the photos and there's still no real aim, you don't think?
No, well then I met Fred
and
in the pub.
Fred, yeah.
And being like, this is not going to work. There's no way this guy's going to be able to get all these heads because if I can't get to them, he certainly is not going to be able to. Not that I was like some aficionado, but like, you know, I was like in the world a bit more.
Yeah.
Like I actually had done it for a little bit.
And you're running with crews that are at it hard.
Yeah, but even then, back then, that was kind of not a good thing to be.
No,
honest.
It wasn't.
Especially with ATG lot.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
And like, ITS lot was whatever. We're just like
pub bombing
crews.
Yeah.
And then, you know, he was like, all right, let's do this. Let's just try and do this book. And I was like, no way, this shit's not going to work out. And then I can't really remember exactly how we got it off the ground.
It took about 2 years, though, surely.
It took a couple of years. I remember, like, photographed you for it. And then ended up photographing loads of people in the scene, getting all these stories, getting all these, like flicks from people. I can't really remember exactly how he managed to do it all, but
I helped quite a bit.
All right, calm, don't do that. Barry Big Bollocks over
Barry
here.
Big Bollocks was stated.
I mean, there was a lot of people involved
in
it who kind of helped out, and I think, you know, like it just worked out. It took a few years, but then
It started as a magazine idea, and then ended up.
I can't really. To be honest, I can't exactly remember. I just remember, like, jumping around London and, like, meeting people I'd met before. I remember, like, meeting Knees just before he got locked up and doing a photo of him. And then there was, like, this back and forth with us because he was like, you can't actually use the photographs because I'm in this case and blah, 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 blah. And I think he ended up getting sentenced and being like, you know what, fuck it, just use it because I'm going down anyway.
It's done, yeah.
Just use it. And I think that you use photographs that whatever have, you know, which are public or whatever have been used in the case. And then, yeah, just photographed loads of people, man. Photograph people I always wanted to photograph, and it was an excuse to photograph people because there was going to be an end product.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, managed to get it all nicely published and hardback and designed.
Mate, that is the fucking, it's the best thing to come out of the London graffiti scene in terms of publishing that we've ever had.
Well, the thing is, yeah,
there's
like,
nothing
to,
better has
to
come
us,
out.
It was kind of like the book we always wanted.
Yeah,
like,
it's the book the culture needed in this city was that book.
Yeah, you never get any thanks, man.
Of course you don't. It's no. London, right?
It'd be funny to see what people think of it now who
Listen,
are in it.
I don't give a fuck what people say. And to be honest, like, you know, yeah, I don't care what people say. That book is a fucking solid piece of history which London needed because we didn't have anything. And you know what? Nothing has come since either. So that book is integral, and your part in it is obviously super integral. And Fred just having that fucking, like, fuck it, I'm doing this. And
I think he has like some super tenacity to get stuff
done. That
guy
contacted me in 2004 was when I first chatted to him. That book came out in 2010.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is with Fred, whatever people say about him, and you know, whoever personal, if anyone has personal problems with him, whatever, but he gets stuff done, man.
He gets shit done. But that is quite.
And also,
surprising.
He's still like, to be honest, I still like do stuff with him to this day, and like I'm still friends with him, and like
that was his first major project to move into what he does, I suppose, as well. Then, because he wasn't doing anything before that, really, was he? He was just part of a culture.
I mean, he knew a lot. I mean, he did know like some people.
But that was his first project, which led him on to his what he does now. In terms, of...
I think it was both of ours, to be honest.
That
it was
is
like
nuts. I just presumed that apart from a MySpace and maybe a bit of Hurt You Bad Press or whatever, you had done other work before that book.
I mean, you might I can't have remember. I think you know what I think. You know what I was doing as well. I was assisting the Time Out photographer.
Oh, right.
So I was working in the Time Out offices and assisting them, and then occasionally I'd shoot for Time Out.
Wow.
That was around the same time period.
Okay.
I think it would have definitely overlapped.
So you got into it then as a profession as well by then?
I mean, once every like couple days a week or something really. I mean, no, to be honest, at that time it was like I was super happy about doing it.
You're thinking,
that.
Right, fuck it, this is it. This
you
is
get
me.
Paid like, I can't remember, getting paid like 200. 250 a day, nice. Which to me, I was like,
mate, you're laughing
sick.
At that age, man. And especially as it being an assistant fit and all that type of shit. That's brilliant. Yeah. And so that's what I was thinking. I was like, there has to have been something that was, because it was quite a long time.
I did do like some other assisting with people, bits and like working in like a studio a little bit, but nothing.
So you're
solid.
Obviously nurturing that talent and you knew that was it. You're probably...
to this day, I don't know about
you
that.
Still don't like, think was,
it's
a fucking...
Well, it's just like you just do it, don't you? Yeah. You just like it's not really another option at this point either.
So, I mean,
it's not really.
Yeah, all right, well, look, that book, the book drops, and it's fucking amazing. And you know, as I say, it's a massive piece of London history that we really needed, and it was beautifully like given to the city, like. Everyone's in it that needs to be in it, and
oh, we missed a few people.
There's
but
obviously,
yeah,
there's
yeah,
obviously,
missed a few
listen,
people,
it was
yeah.
Always going to happen. Not everyone was going to fit in it, unless they were going to pay for those extra pages, maybe, or whatever the deal may have. That shit was a beautiful piece of work that came out. And so, after Crack and Shine drops, you're then someone in you then got a bigger voice in the culture.
Yeah,
automatically, whether you like it or not, you're then Will Robson Scott, the photographer.
Especially
to the culture.
I mean, like in London, I was probably like that guy who took some photographs. Like,
well,
no,
yeah, and then what the people that could speak properly would say.
Yeah,
the right thing. But yeah,
and then
okay.
So we did the I'm also a bit confused with timings, but so we did Crack and Shine. I can't remember how it actually did sales-wise. I've no idea, to be honest.
All the copies went, that's what you know.
I don't think they did, man. Right. Not all of them. No, I think quite a lot of them did go, but there's still
if
some knocking
still got
around.
Some left, they're going to go for good money.
So we did that, and then... Yeah, kind of got into photographing other stuff. Started doing like a project. So now this is around 2000. I think that book came out 2009.
Nine, yeah, it was nine actually.
When this was going on, No, I don't think it was 8. I think it was 9. Late. Yeah, I think it was... I remember the launch we did at Village Underground.
Yeah, amazing.
Yeah, it was a laugh. And then kind of along that time, I started photographing, trying to do a project on like pirate radio stations.
Okay.
And then that slowly morphed into doing a project on kind of like grime MCs.
Nice.
And it kind of morphed because the reason I wanted to do the pirate radio station projects was pirate radio was dying out.
Yeah.
Because the internet was really getting big.
Mid-2000s by now. Late.
This is 2009. Yeah, started this around 2008.
Yeah, so mid to late
2000s. 2008.
They did start to waver off because, yeah, you're right.
And this is kind of, you know, this is when... God, was it before? This is kind of like Streets Remixes era of like D-Double and, you know, that Get Out of My House remix. I think that's earlier, actually. I think that's a few years earlier, actually. Yeah. I think that might have been 2006-ish. Anyway, whatever, it's that era where, like, grime is getting eyes on it, but it's not, like, a massive thing. I mean, there were big people like, I don't know, Lady Sovereign, the biggest person.
Yeah.
Whatever. So
Channel
I tried to...
Days.
Big Channel U Days.
Yeah.
Big Channel U days. I was kind of a bit older as well at that point, but I kind of saw it as a, to me, it like, I didn't have like a super, like, my musical knowledge was like not super deep, but to me, it kind of reminded me of, to me, it was very British and very punky. Like the kind of way the beats were made were obviously like low budget Fruity Loops.
Yeah.
But there was like a real, it was super British.
Yeah.
And like the way people would spit on the tunes was not like, it wasn't like British hip hop. It wasn't like Skinny Man or Task Force.
Yeah, UK hip hop didn't talk in an American accent, but they kind of had the hip hop flow and grime.
But it was just an evolution. I remember going to secondary school and I remember everyone would just talk about Heartless Crew, especially being in like Finchley and stuff. Yeah. Everyone's cousin was Mighty Mo.
Yeah.
Literally. You know how many people I know whose cousin's Mighty Mo? Like going to school, I swear everyone was like, oh yeah, my cousin's Mighty Mo. And I wasn't even so into Heartless, but you'd hear it. I remember like the tapes and I remember like that Ali Pally rave where like a million people were on stage and then there was obviously the... Heartless Pays You Go beef, which like every, if you couldn't miss it being at school.
I just remember
those that was at like Camden Palace, I think. I remember people like going to it as well and coming back and being like, oh shit, Heartless Crew killed them, and especially because it was in North London. I wanted to photograph these pirate radio stations before they died, and then I went to like Cool, Y2K, Rinse before it was Rinse now, and it was just impossible to photograph. Not, it's just because it was like this room.
Yeah,
it was just like some old, like some like young kids, and then like one. That's why people just do nothing have got it on point.
Yeah,
because there's like two dudes in a room in a kitchen in a block of flats, and then one dude who's just like so lean in the corner, like just so stoned, and then like some old guy who's just there, like you're like, well, who's that? Like, not saying a word. So anyway, I actually got a few okay photographs, but I was like, this is so hard to photograph. Going back, it would have been a really sick film project to do.
Yeah,
like a moving image project. But then it just like I slowly started meeting some MCs. Like, not like I was mates with any of them, but just like I remember I met I'd also be photographing nights at this point as well, like so like ATG were doing nights and then Urban Nerds as well were an extension of that, so I'd kind of be going to these nights and bringing my camera along as well. And I remember I'd shot like a load of pirates at this point, but I wasn't like super like,
it wasn't, you weren't getting what you wanted, really.
It wasn't that, I just was like, I was a bit lazy, to be perfectly honest. Like I wasn't lazy. I'd be going to Bow at like, you know, 1 AM to get like the graveyard shift at Cool FM or something from North London. It wasn't that I was lazy, but I guess I just didn't have a clear enough idea of what I actually wanted. Yeah. And I remember I met at this night, I remember meeting this MC from Rough Squad called Fudder Guy, who's like a Rough Squad guy.
Yeah.
And I remember him being like, I want you to do press shots for me. Take my phone number, or he took my phone number and exchange, whatever. And then he was like, I'll come down to Bow photographed me, went down, and he was really good friends with Tinchy Strider.
Right.
And then Tinchy Strider just showed up and was like, yeah, bro, I've got to take some photos. Not that he talks like that, yeah. But... And then I photographed him, and he was big at the time. Yeah. And then I met this other dude called DJ Magic, who ran No Hats, No Hoods,
yeah,
and Dirty Canvas. And he was kind of... He wasn't managing people, but he was working closely with a lot of people. And he still does, yeah, I think, to this day. But then he kind of introduced me to, like, loads of people. Like most and of the MCs.
It became the thing then. They all wanted you to...
No, they didn't. They didn't care, to be honest. But no. I wanted to photograph them. Okay. I don't think they really cared. There's a few of them who were, like, more receptive than others.
Maybe a lot of them... more business savvy.
They just didn't give a shit to be... I mean, they did, but, like... I remember wait for hours for them.
Mm-hmm.
And, but the thing is, because I was used to dealing with writers, I was like, this is normal.
Yeah.
I was like, this is normal waiting for 2 hours for someone. Like,
it's standard.
Yeah.
That's
like,
fine.
It's fine. I remember like waiting once for like 2 hours in the freezing cold, and one of them being like, oh yeah, sorry, I was cold, I had a bath. I was like, all right, nice one, cheers. Right, let's go. Like, come on. Cool. And I just remember... Again, taking me to parts of London I didn't know well, like super deep east, like Maryland, Forest Gate, Newham,
hitting the DL,
Plaistow, like District Line, like Deep District, Deep Central Line. And then for like a year or so, I just tried to photograph everyone. I kind of approached it like the Crack and Shine thing, where I wanted to do almost like a survey of like the scene.
Yeah,
I didn't really care if they were like super big or super small.
This is who
it was. It was more who was interesting and like kind of like writers, like the grimier the better.
Yeah,
you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Like
that,
I always wanted a photo of Koz.
Yeah,
I got it.
Yeah,
like to a lot of people from outside of London, they'd be like, "Oh, sorry, what?" But like to anyone in London, be like, "Oh, that's the king." Yeah, yeah. And then like same thing with them. So I just went around, tried to photograph everyone. Like, you know. Got some like photographs I really like to this day, for, like people like D Double and Temper T and whoever, Wiley, and you know.
So then that was it. It was like I'm doing all of this photography.
I mean, I was shooting, and then
I've gone through a successful project.
I've gone through a reasonably successful project, but it's still not like I wasn't having any like ad companies knock on the door.
No, of course not. No, not I wasn't having any rep in a culture. You don't really get that, man. Not
actually. Funnily enough, I did publish some photos from. The Crack and Shine.
Yeah.
Originally, the Crack and Shine thing was called Ego Bombing. It was a project I wanted to do. And I started doing it at university, actually, because they gave me a portrait project. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I'll do a portrait project, but just cover everyone's face.
Yeah.
So I shot, like, you and Josh.
Yeah.
Shot loads of people. That's kind of how it got a bit more traction. And I completely forgot what I was just saying.
About that being a first project, then, and what Crack and Shine was about to come, was meant to be... So it was going to be... So basically, you got through... What I'm saying is that... So by this time, you're fully... You are Will Robson Scott, the photographer.
I mean, kind of, but not really, man.
No, but I think to everyone else, you were. Because...
I think you're also thinking that this is like Instagram days, man.
No, because
there was not a platform for it.
No, it wasn't even... No, but it was for those who knew. So the writers knew that if you wanted that photo... Or the person who took those photos was Will Robson Scott. And in the grime scene as well, it would have been the same thing. Like, that was that person.
Yeah. A little bit. I mean, a few of the MCs I wouldn't say I was friends with, but you know, they'd hit me up to do like a single or an album, or like I remember I did like P Money's single thing, and like Rude Kid, who's now like producing loads. Like I was kind of, you know, matey with him. I did some like little bits and bobs for most people who were MCing, but it wasn't like today. It wasn't like. I never had Facebook. No. I don't think it was Facebook time either.
Whatever it was, yeah.
Like, it was kind of MySpace.
But that was your last kind of...
Will's Images.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I kind of had a clearer idea what I wanted to pursue, but I don't think it was like... I don't know, man. I'd quite like to know what a lot of people in Crack and Shine think of it now. I wonder if they think it's like a... If they hold it dear to themselves.
Oh, well, anyone does. You can't tell me that's not an important piece of
history. So, yeah, did that, did the grime stuff.
Yeah, and your calendar. I remember you did a calendar.
Yeah, that was with Magic. Pats No Hats No Hood. Looking back on it, it's like the stupidest idea, but like it's really annoying. My mum like found like 50 of them at my house at hers about I don't know a year ago, and I was like, oh fuck it, just chuck them out. Like chuck them out. But I'm thinking now it's a stupid idea because grime is now pop music, and all them heads in it. Not all of them, but like a lot of them are.
They're in the
bigger stars. And then I also at the same time was doing this set of portraits of dogs and their owners with one of my best mates, Ollie Grove, who was like super fanatical about dogs, and like I'm a big dog person as well, and we kind of just decided to do a joint project, like a collaboration of photographing people and their dogs. And again, it was like a good way to be able to photograph people who necessarily don't want to be photographed by themselves, but if you sell it to them as want to photograph your dog,
yeah,
people are more interested in it.
Yeah.
So I ended up like getting to shoot like Martin Parr, the super legendary British photographer.
Mr. Hudson,
bringing it back to like early 2000 musical people. Yeah, Mr. Hudson. Shit, I forgot about that. I don't know where that photograph is. Again, it was like a broad spectrum of people, like survey-ish, which carried on for ages, carried on forever. And then we published a book from it 2 years ago called In Dogs We Trust.
But it's still in print.
You can still buy it on the website.
Yeah.
So kind of had that project going on at the same time, which was like a slow burner.
And I remember your Top Deck as well. That was wicked.
Oh yeah, and then did Top Deck, which is like just photographs from like a weird perspective of the top of double decker buses looking down. Did that with a photographer called James Pearson House. Another like collaboration.
So now we're, by now, so that's what mid 2010s.
I can't,
We must be around.
Well, no.
So hang on. I got Top Deck in 2010.
Yeah, but then there's also Crack and Shine International and that then, came so out in 2011. Next,
which was the same premise?
Crack and Shine International was basically an extension of Crack and Shine. Actually, it wasn't an extension, it was none of the same content was involved. But basically, Fred somehow wanked. Well, this is actually. Because of Hurt You Bad, one of the dudes at Hurt You Bad worked for. I just tell the story. I'm not sure. Why should I try and be cryptic about it? One of the dudes from Hurt You Bad worked for Vans.
Yeah,
was a big fan of it. Obviously, they had a marketing budget for whatever. They somehow Fred wangled through this dude from Hurt You Bad, a load of money to make content.
Wicked.
The content was films. And the second book,
and
the films were on different cities, like basically a profile of specific writers from specific cities around the world, like little action interview stuff. So we did like London. Where did we do London, Berlin, LA? Oh no, I'm getting convoluted now with the film. Basically, dude, Keegan Gibbs from LA, who was like MSK, AWR dude, who was friends with all them, came along with me, and he did the films, and I did the photos. Right. I wasn't at that point doing any films or moving images.
Did you film that? No.
No.
Keegan did that.
So Keegan did the first set of those films, and through that we went, we did like Paris, London, LA, New York, Berlin,
Amsterdam.
Did you go to Tokyo or anything?
Nah, we didn't have that much money.
No.
Do we go anywhere else? We had eggs, but we didn't go to Helsinki. Like, just met him in Amsterdam, actually. That's about it.
Cool. Those Barcelona, maybe.
I went to Barcelona afterwards and did a film. But the first set was me and Keegan going to all these places. We got all the content for this book and made even a bigger version of Crack and Shine, better finish, like silver foiling, similar shits, embossed, hardback. We actually managed to get them shrink wrapped, which is anyone doing a book shrink wrap your book shrink wrap your books, because if you don't. Especially if you do like a foil on the outside, which is like the embossed silver or gold stuff for anyone who doesn't know. it will come off. Like, okay. If you look at the first cracking shines, loads of the silver will have come off.
Just flakes out.
And also, if you, I mean, and if they were just sitting in storage,
yeah,
without a shrink wrap, they'll. And to be honest, Kraken Shine International, the foil comes off as well, but
it's been protected, it's a bit in warehouses better, yeah. Before.
Then, Vans did that. Vans helped us out, gave them a logo on the book, and they got like 6 films for their platform. And then after that, I think he somehow managed to get some more money off them. And then at that point, I'd started doing films as well.
Uh-huh.
So then I went to, I can't remember, I did a few films. I went to Barcelona and to Copenhagen.
Uh-huh.
And I can't remember where else now. But I did some films, shot some more photos. And then we did like a B-sides, which was a much smaller B-sides of like Crack and Shine International called uh-huh. Crack On, Shine On, which is like a smaller format, not hardback.
Uh-huh.
Super limited publication in these films. And yeah, released that in like, I don't know, when was that? 2000. I can't remember. 13 maybe? I don't know. And then at that point as well, I was doing films at this point as well. I was making short films.
And photography's obviously led you into that, and it was just working with Keegan, was that a bit of inspiration or?
No, to be honest, I didn't really think about it because I was like a big film guy, like I still am, as in like I'm a big analog. I'm not anti-digital, but I still prefer to shoot film.
Yeah.
Didn't really think about it, and then I managed to get my hands on a 5D actually.
Yeah.
And all you have to do is click one button, which will turn it from stills to
video.
Yeah. And I was like, oh.
Might as well.
You got to know some simple basics.
Yeah.
Like keep your shutter speed a bit low, and like if you know how to expose for stuff, which with digital is super easy because you just look at the monitor. Yeah, I just started doing some films and then like kind of figured out a tiny little setup that I would use, and every film got a little bit better. And then I did like a series of short films on weird characters from like Jella, who was this old West Ham ICF East hooligan, London, East London dude with stories for days, who was a junkie, got locked up, got paralysed. Went to Ibiza, went on the run from Ibiza, just like nut stories. This other dude, Graham, who's like he's actually from like, I remember from years ago skating. He's always around. He's like, he's got Asperger's syndrome. But he's like a super nice guy. And it was just kind of about his day to day. Then like a film about Ricky Powell, who's like a New York photographer, who was like the 4th Beastie Boy member. This dude, Popek, who's like this MMA fighter who gets his eyeball tattooed. And I started doing more and more.
What was it like being in that room, man?
I mean, to be honest, it's kind of a super gnarly procedure, but I don't have any tattoos, but I've seen a million people get tattoos.
Yeah.
And even the sound of a tattoo guy is aggressive, man. You look in someone's face and people are like, oh. However like hard someone is, getting a tattoo hurts.
Hell, putting that in the eyeball.
But no, if you get your eyeball tattooed, basically it's tattooing, it's not, you don't get like a design done in your eyeball. Your white is turned to a specific colour. And what they do is they get a syringe and just pop it into your eye and then just pump it full of whatever ink. But the procedure is like completely illegal, I think.
Mm.
And there's this one dude who was doing it, this nuts dude who's like a known... He's like a guy on the scene for doing body modification. And when I was filming it, like halfway through, I was kind of a bit like, if this dude goes blind,
oh my God.
Like, it's not kind of footage I want sitting on my hard drive just for karma.
Yeah.
Just karma wise.
That is a fucking deep, you got to check that film, man. That is a deep film.
And to be honest, looking back at watching my old films, I'm like, oh my God, they are so shoddy. Like, there's so many things. I just shoot them handheld.
I think they're all nice, man.
I mean, they serve a purpose and they're like whatever, but I wouldn't do it like that anymore.
So after all of these and you've built yourself this career, and then I know in that time as well, you were flying back and forth to New York. And
yeah, I wasn't really living in London or New York. I didn't have anywhere to live properly.
Yeah, you were just back and forth constantly.
Luckily, I had like people I could stay with.
Yeah.
I don't know, for a while I was living in Stoke Newington with Ollie.
Yeah.
And then I'd like stay in New York and then jump back and forth. And then I just decided to kind of I've been back and forth from New York and London for like the past 7 years.
Yeah.
I've been in New York like solidly, probably
decided to live
4 years.
Yeah.
It wasn't really a decision, it just happened, but
and so is that work predominantly, and you know,
I mean, it's a bit of both. Like, being freelance anywhere is difficult, but the difference with America is, well, it's not the strict difference, but you can make more money in America.
Mm.
Some of like the budgets you get in America are just, it seems, it's for me, it has, like, last year, to be honest, was like a pretty difficult year work-wise.
Mm.
But there have been, you know, you get a few jobs from like a big company and you're set.
So they pay better, probably.
I don't know. It seems like they pay better in America. I don't know, really.
I think we kind of got that. We had a conversation about this when I was out there. And I think, you know, it seems like they pay better. But the conclusion we came up with was the fact that actually their market's a lot bigger. So their budgets can be bigger.
Yeah.
So in the UK, we've got this size of country, and America's got this size of country. So it makes sense. And so while you're out there and you've been living there now full time 4 years, and do you, I didn't even ask, like, you love London?
I love New York.
Yeah.
Like, I super love, you know what? I love coming back to London.
Okay. Yeah.
London's a great place to come back to.
But you prefer living in New York?
I don't really know what, like, at the moment. America's such a weird place that, like, yeah. I don't really know. But then you say, everyone's like, oh, Trump's so bad. And I'm like, dude, just look at England. It's just as bad, like, to be honest, with Brexit. Mm. It's like, America is not New York and LA.
No, and it's the same with London not being. Yeah.
America is the rest of America.
Yeah.
New York, LA, and like Austin, maybe, and a few other places in America are cosmopolitan and liberal. And you can walk out the door and like everything's at your fingertips.
Yeah.
But to be honest, the majority of America, although it has lots of natural beauty, it's not like that. It's a conservative country that, you know, still has the death penalty and. You know, they don't like gays, they don't like people who look different, they don't, you know, not at all a blanket statement, like, no, America's great, but it can be quite conservative. But the same said for England, you know, London and like Manchester and Brighton and these cosmopolitan big cities are the anomaly. The rest of England is like the reality of England.
And also the rest of, it's the same with America, the rest of these cities, apart from the major ones, are living a completely different life. And
No, like, I'm not talking shit about any of them, because because the thing is, like, it's kind of similar to, like for example, the project I did in Chicago, film Chirac, which was all in like the South Side and West Side, about like all the gun violence. You can't really, like, unless you live in that person's situation, you can't really comment on it, honestly. No. Because, you know, if I lived in wherever, Alabama or wherever it may be, and, you know, my dad used to work in a factory, like, I'm going to vote for Trump.
He's promising shit, of course you are.
Same shit with Brexit.
It's the same thing, man. Some people's heart cords were pulled. We got lied to in the same way the Americans have been lied to, because that guy ain't going to do fuck all for anyone.
Yeah.
And the same with Brexit. It's not going to do anything for those people that voted us out of this country.
It's like, if your life's bad, it's kind of like it probably can't get any worse. Mm. So what's the, why not take a punt on someone, the unknown, or like the person who's that bit left of centre?
That's what I'm hoping is going to happen this time around in England.
Yeah, I just registered to vote today.
Wicked. Good. Everyone should register to vote and get on that shit.
Voting.
So
UKIP.
Now you're living America's lifestyle. You've got Chirac, which is an amazing film. What other films have you done out there?
Oh,
you've done a couple.
I did the, what have I done? I mean, what, like, just everything commercial wise?
Yeah, you do. So you do Chirac. You take photos out there. You're working with agencies and producing work for different companies. Working for magazines.
Yeah,
it's a full time job. You are Will Robson Scott, the photographer.
It is and it isn't. This year has been
a freelancer.
This year has been like really busy.
Yeah,
but last year was super slow.
Right. Yeah.
And like a lot of the time,
but that's life for a freelancer, though.
Of course,
it
is.
Yeah.
But the reality of it is, as well, is that the jobs that pay you well are not necessarily jobs that you're going to be advertising like that you did.
There's things that pay the bills that you keep
Yeah, that paid and bills. That's the reality and of a lot of yeah. stuff. And you do cool stuff that you don't get paid for, or you know, just break
and
even.
You think that's well? I think this is the thing. People that are part of a culture, I think we understand that. Yeah, you do have to work, and you've got to get the bills paid. And if you're lucky, you can do. You will go out of his camera and take photos for a brand. He may not be proud of those shots and might want to put them on his website. But the thing is, that paid the bill. But it's important for you to make sure you still do your cultural stuff, which is still make the films you want to make and still.
I mean, it's just as important to do like a good job for a brand,
whatever brand. Yeah,
like you know. You know,
yeah,
it's more important to do a good job, because if you do a bad job for a client, they're not going to come back to you because that's another thing. There's such a massive pool of people out there who can do the same job better or cheaper or whatever.
A million and one other reasons
that they could, you know, choose someone else. If you get picked by a client, like, you got to really try and one, keep a good relationship with them, and two, like, do a good job for them and don't be an arsehole about it. Yeah,
get it done and get it
like,
done right.
But sometimes it's difficult. Like,
yeah, of course it is. It doesn't work every time for every client, but that's what you strive to do.
Yeah, like getting paid a lot of money for, like, ideally a job that isn't a job is, like, pretty amazing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's kind of crazy to think that you can get paid thousands of pounds for taking a photo or directing not even touching a camera. You just say to someone, all right, point that camera there, yeah, and hit the red button, and you get paid for it. It's crazy.
Oh, that's amazing, man. And so, you see yourself staying out in America for much longer, or is it still a bit of a, I'm not sure?
Yeah, yeah. Ideally, I'd like to be able to live in both.
Yeah.
I'd love to be able to do like 6 months in America, 6 months in England, but
it's a lot of work to cater for that type of lifestyle.
It's difficult because you kind of need two places to live, which is not a reality for me.
Because
it'd be too expensive.
When are you going to lose your accent? You get an American accent.
This is just for you lot when I'm in America.
Doesn't go really.
No. To be honest, actually, living in America, it's made me more English.
Really? Yeah.
There's some things you have to say, like. There's some things you have to, like,
people don't understand what you
mean. I have to say tomato.
And garbage.
Yeah, I think I said garbage. You said garbage. So there's things that you have to do because otherwise tomato. If you're there for a week, you can have the old banter back and forth where you go, I want a tomato, and they're like, what?
Yeah.
Tomato. And it just, if you're there for years on end, it's just like you can't be bothered to have that conversation again. And it's like, you say, it depends how much you don't pronounce your T's, but water. You have to remember to pronounce your T's. And even if you say water, it's huh? Water or water. And they're like, huh? And then you go, water. And they go, water. Yeah. And they get it. But I mean, there's loads of English people in New York.
There are a lot of vowels that become really uncomfortable.
Well, there's just certain things you have to say, like, you say, like, where's the restroom?
Yeah.
Or, like, I remember I went in to buy to this place called Trader Joe's, which is like a cheap version of Whole Foods.
Yeah.
It's like, it's not even a version of Whole Foods, but it's like a cheap supermarket in New York.
Yeah.
And I went in and I was like in a bad mood for some reason. I can't remember why. I was just in a bad mood. And I went up to the window. I had this recipe and I was like, yo, have you got any aubergine? She like looked at me like I was crazy. She was like, what? I was like, aubergine. Have you got aubergine? She was like, what? And I started getting more and more annoyed. I was like, what the fuck is this thing? How come she doesn't know
what
an aubergine is? I'm like, aubergine. And then I was like, got my phone out to Google it. And then it come up and I was like, oh, I'm like, so sorry, eggplant. And she's like, what's an aubergine? I was like, oh, I'm English. This is what we call eggplants. And she was like, and she was so nice to me. It made me feel like such an arsehole. She was like, I think we just got an order in, sir. I'm going to go into like the van and get you one. I was like, oh, I'm so sorry. Like, I was just in like a foul mood, and her looking at me, I was thinking, I'm only stupid American. But really, it's like stupid English person. It's like me just like shouting gobbledygook in someone's face. Aubergine. 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 And she's like, what? She's like scared, like this weird person. But it's funny in America, to be honest, the majority of people do not. I think Americans Americans are going to hate me if they do this, but like a lot of them have a different idea of what a Londoner sounds like. They think you're either like Ray Winston or Hugh Grant.
Yeah.
Like the in between, they don't know. So it's always like, oh my god, where in Australia are you from? Yeah. And I'm like, I'm not fucking Aussie. And then it's like New Zealand. They're like, no. And they're like South African. You're like, that's the worst one. I'm not fucking South African. I'm from London. And they're like, really? You don't sound like you're from London. And I'm like, well, all right, just go. Oh, I'm Australian.
So you're film tinted ear.
What have you got next? You got anything? What have you got on your mind to do next?
I don't know, man. To be honest, I'm kind of caught up in some commercial stuff at the moment.
Right.
That is like I have to get sorted, and that's why I'm here for a job.
Right.
So
get all that out of the way.
Yeah, like I'm trying to like do some music stuff as well. Like I kind of now try and if I go somewhere, I hit people up and be like, oh, I'm here. Is there any like? If you want any features done for magazines or but yeah, like personal wise, to be honest, I haven't got like a really set thing in mind. A lot of the time with personal projects is they kind of come by chance, and if you really try and push it, it sometimes doesn't work. But I definitely need to do another film. I did a film last year, another like a lead on to Chirac called God Loves Ugly, which was again like revisiting like the south side of Chicago, which was pretty cool doing that again. And then I did a project last year with the UN in Malawi on like the AIDS crisis, but if you really were to Google it, you could find it, but it was for some AIDS conference. And just working this year on just for like clients and stuff from like whatever headphone companies,
magazines, and this stuff.
Magazines.
It's a fucking cool life, man. That rolled out really nicely. That was to think of just bumming about. I've got all these cultures, but
still am bumming about, to be honest, a little bit, but.
And then getting a college degree, getting a college course sorted out just so you could get mum and dad off your back.
Oh, I actually missed out. I did actually go to uni as well.
And then, you dropped it in the uni thing. So after college, you obviously like, well, this is obviously what I want to learn more.
Yeah,
and I went obviously to keep your parents on my back even more.
I went to uni in Wales.
Yeah.
In Newport.
And also the third person to mention South Bank.
Am I?
Yeah.
South Bank. Well, everyone mentioned South Bank.
He was the third person to mention South
Bank. Tan's talking shit. He never went to South Bank.
Tan went to South Bank.
He mentions it, though.
And so does Jack.
Make sure you mention that. Tan never went to South Bank.
Even if you didn't go there, though, I mean, it was still something you were very aware of if you were into skating.
I went there. I was not into skating, but in 1997, a mate of mine had died, and this girl at the wake ended up knocking out a security guard at the Tesco in Sainsbury's on Kilburn High Road. Anyway, we were all there. We all got arrested. We ended up going into... I didn't get arrested, actually. But I went to go and support my friends in court, and it was down there, the court hearing, for some reason. And so at the end of the session, I went off and I walked down and I found South Bank. And I'd been there as a kid and passed it, but I didn't pay much attention. But that was my first time going to look for the place where the skating and the graffiti was. And I was writing by then, but that was the first time I saw it. It was in 97.
Yeah.
And I never went back again, I don't think.
Well, like, you can cut my South Bank bit out. We'll just put in a Tan never went to South Bank. You fraud. That'd be good if every person who does it, you get them to like chat shit about each other.
Yeah.
Jack was there. I saw Jack at South Bank.
Never saw Tan.
Fucking Tan was never there, man.
Mate.
Gallivanting around to...
He's actually
gallivanting around Zone 7 or whatever.
Zone A.
Kingston. That's not London.
He did admit that. That was wicked, Will.
Yeah.
Cool. Thank you very much, man. Right. And looking forward to seeing more. And what is it? WillRobsonScott.com.
Will's Images.
Will's Images. MySpace.com.
No, it's .co.uk. That's how proud I am of...
You're keeping it British.
My Britishness.
And you've got an Instagram.
No.
No, everyone's on Instagram.
Will, I do.
Will RS?
Yeah.
Yeah. Go and look at it. Thank you very much.
Don't look at the Instagram.
Will is a really funny guy, 24 my arse. That was a really cool story, and it was a pleasure to get him over here. I think his work is great and expansive. He took a beautiful photo of my son and I for that Crack and Shine book. I'm really proud of it. And one of my favourite projects of his is Top Deck, shots from the top deck of London buses, printed in a newspaper format. It's really nice. Go check his work out and check his films as well, actually. Graham and Chirac are my favourites out there, but he's done a load more. And you can find him at willrobsonscott.co.uk or just search him on Google. I hope you enjoyed that conversation. Until next week, love your city and love your culture.